Thank you. Thank you very much for the clapping. It means more than the beginning. Thank you.
And yes, thank you very much, Carlo, for this extraordinary film. I mean, for a documentary, you would expect, I don't know, talking heads and a bit of, you know, voiceover, but you really managed to create images and a score which leads you through the thoughts and the impressions and the expressions of the interviews. That's quite amazing. For my first question, I want to refer to the panel discussion we had on Friday, and there you said that one of the initial moments for you to develop this film or this interrogation with Mandela was seeing Mandela leaving the prison, a man, being a man without anger. Could you talk about that a bit?
That's actually not the reason why I made the film.
One of the initial moments.
Yeah. No. The initial moment was, I have to correct this, the initial moment is that I was in Spain and San Sebastian, and I had gone there to show one of my films, and at that time, you know, there was a whole thing of the Basque country, and there was a lot of violence and a whole lot of conflict. And when we were having dinner one night, a human rights lawyer who lived in South Africa said, what Spain needs is a Nelson Mandela to unite the country. And that's actually the seed of the film. You know, that's why it was never from the beginning a purely South African film with only South Africans and all those kind of things. It was purely like, I was fascinated by this idea of, and I hear it even now, people go like, only if Nelson Mandela could intervene in Syria and Palestine and Israel, you know. It's quite an interesting thought, I think. And I started making this film because I remembered my own childhood and what my grandmother told me about Nelson Mandela. And I thought that was interesting. And she died, so I thought it would be a homage and I pay respect to her also at the same time. So, yeah.
Okay, so, and I mean, you started more or less with, let's say, about the conversations on Sunday afternoon. It was a kind of fiction documentary. Then you went to a fiction, which also dealt with similar issues which you're dealing now. So, and then you came back to a documentary. Was there a specific reason why you, I mean, because it's a very personal story you're telling. I mean, it's a letter to Mandela, the first version of the title.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because there are kind of versions, and it's a long story because there are so many partners in it. So there's a letter to Nelson Mandela, then there's Nelson Mandela, the myth and me, yeah, whatever. So, but I think for me, it was a grandson trying to talk to a grandfather, or a son trying to talk to a father. That was, you know, I was conscious that I didn't want to, because I had a very close relationship with my own grandfather, you know, and when he, at the age of 90, he had cancer, and I started talking to him about his life and what has happened, and the kind of turmoil and turbulence that I had sometimes with him when I was young, because I lived with him for 2 years. I understood one thing, that I had to be gentle in my address, even though I had a very difficult relationship with my own grandfather, you know. So when I started writing this letter, I knew that I need to say what I want to say, but it has to be very gentle and sensitive.
And when you were looking for your interview partners, I mean, I guess they were much more than which are now in the film, but did you face any difficulties with the people who in a way refused to talk or to in a way critically talk about Mandela?
I mean, you know, I wanted, one of the things I wanted is that I saw Arnold Dorfman talk about Nelson Mandela, and I thought that it was one of the most extraordinary experiences I saw, you know. And then I wanted the ANC to actually talk about Nelson Mandela. I thought it was important for the documentary. And I made all sorts of efforts and whatever. It never happened. I even actually set up a camera, and I was supposed to interview someone in the ANC, and they didn't rock up that morning. And they called to say they've changed their minds and everything else. But it was quite, and you know, because of also co-productions, it's very complicated of way of reconstructing a narrative, you know. But in the end, I think with documentaries, I think you know, I don't think about people that I don't have, that I wanted to interview. I mean, I think it would have been amazing to have someone in the current leadership of the ANC. I think so. I think it would have been really amazing, but it never happened. Mm-hmm. And I did ask, and they said no. They said all said no. So it is what it is, mm-hmm. you know.
So maybe there are questions from the audience here.
Thank you very much for the film. Is it planned to have a German subtitled version of it?
I'll tell you, we screened this film because it's a really interesting, because this version here, and we have also another version that we did for PBS and everything else. But this version that we did was the version that was on Arte. And actually, I was dubbed. My voice was all in German. Actually, I was very traumatized watching it. I said to myself, I mean, when I had a German voice say I grew up in a village, I was just like, oh my God. You know? how does one deal with this kind of trauma? So yes, there is. Actually, they are releasing it in cinemas in November in Germany. Yeah. So if you like it, tell your friends, tell your families. You know, African cinema is so hard to really transport. Honestly speaking, it doesn't matter. All African filmmakers will tell you it's so hard. Cinema in general is so hard to travel and transport and everything else. And I think, you know, there is a way in which, you know, when you try to make films, you know, as an African filmmaker, that the fence of you trying to make the film, the walls are too high, you know, because people are not interested in your voice, you know. When I did this documentary, and I remember we had a premiere at ITFA, and we had main competition, and one of the people who put the money introduced me to another commissioning editor, European one, who I won't mention, and said, oh, Carlo has done this fabulous document about Nelson Mandela, you must buy it. He says, no, I just bought an American version of Nelson Mandela with an American filmmaker, you know? And it, you know, so you struggle all this time because it's this, you know, filmmaking is a struggle. It's a struggle against budgets, it's a struggle about distribution, it's a struggle about story, construction, editing, all those kind of things. But it's also a struggle about your own audience who expect a particular kind of film. And I was saying this yesterday because I've been making films for about 15 years or so, and I find myself in a no man's zone. I find myself in a place where I don't belong. Where I don't belong to the majority, I don't belong to the minority, I don't belong to the radicals, I don't belong to the left, to the right, to anything else, because I make the films that I make, you know? And therefore you are in a very lonely place because people want to pin you down. People want to say, make films for us, make films that speak about us, you know? And you say, but I'm an artist, I'm free. You know, and I want to be free. I want to be free from even the left ideas that I believe in. I want to be free from even anything. You know, I want to make the films that I want to make, that continue to provoke people. You know, and because you're in that space, you are constantly in a very, very difficult place. You know, we had a screening in New York at the Lincoln Center, and people started shouting at me. You know, they were sort of the anti-apartheid movement days, you know. They're like, you know, Nelson Mandela has done so much for the world, how dare? I said, what did I do? You know, I don't even think the documentary is really critical at all, you know. But yeah, but it's a struggle every day, you know, and you know, but I love filmmaking.
I do.
How did the people back home take your film? How did they react to it? This is something that I'm very interested in.
I was, and you know, people have asked me this question, and they ask this question with a two way. One is the fact that they expect South Africans to react negatively to the film, so they assume that South Africans would be different from outside South Africa. And you know, we had a premiere at the Durban Film Festival, and it was completely the most unbelievable experience I've ever had when we had it in Durban. And I remember the first, when someone sat in the room and said, "Oh, Carlo, you know, are you calling for a revolution?" You know, and I was just sitting there and thinking, "Oh my God, what am I doing?" You know, and someone said to me, "Oh, you know," the following day, I remember there was a woman who said to me, "Oh, you know, when I saw it, I really got angry at white people and what they've done." You know, but I think when you make a film, you or any artistic work, you put it out there and people interpret it. They either love it, they don't like it. They, you know, they, whatever kind of emotion that sort of they project after watching the film. I think cinema, a friend of mine once told me that when he was a poet in the 80s, thousands and thousands of people used to come and listen to him and they were moved. And I said to him, "That's not poetry, that's religion." Because, you know, I don't want thousands and thousands of people be moved and come and worship and when I make a film. You know what I mean? I don't want that. You know, it's not, for me, it's not the role. It's not the role of me as a filmmaker. I don't want to do that. You know, I want people to be repelled, to be whatever, all sorts of emotions. But I don't want them to come and go like, you know, "Oh my God," you know, all those kind of things. I'm suspicious of all those kind of things. So, you know, and it's for me. I'm not saying for all artists that's how they should react, whatever. I'm just saying for me, I feel that I should have no sense of belonging and I should constantly be floating.
Yeah, I don't know if I should stand up, but I think it's okay, you know, if I sit so that people don't look at me. Okay. Two questions. One is why the film has changed the name. You said it was Letter to Nelson Mandela at the beginning and now it's The Myth and Me. How did that change and why? And why did you let it and why did you allow that to happen? That's the first question. The second question is what is the reaction of the oppositions in South Africa? What does Julius Malema think about the film? What does Patricia de Lille think about the film? What do all those oppositions? What does Tera Lekota think about the film, for example, you know, today? Those are the two questions. Thank you.
The first question is easy. BBC sent me four things they wanted to change about the film. And the title was one of them. And I wrote to them, I said to them, the three I refused, the one of the title, you can have the title that you want. That's my compromise. Because I think it's really important, you know, and I'm gonna sound a little bit, maybe perhaps the most, not perhaps the most ideal artist, you know? But I think, you know, in life, whether in love, in art, in filmmaking, in everything else, is a constant negotiation with those who finance you, who do whatever, and you choose your battles, and you choose what you fight and what you don't fight, you know? And the title for me was important, but not that important. The other three points that they wanted to change were fundamental to me, so I said no to all of them. You know, so that's what happened. It's a very simple story. I don't know whether Julius Malema has seen the film, but you know, the thing about it is that, you know, one of the things about growing older, and I never thought this would happen to me so quickly because I feel old, is that it actually doesn't matter. It doesn't. I really. I'm not one of those filmmakers who make films and I'm like really interested in what happens because it's such a struggle really to make it. I've never made a film which wasn't a struggle, you know, and it's a struggle to make films. And the only way for me to keep on making films is to protect myself from all sorts of attack. So I protect myself. So half of the time I tell my friends, I said, whether you like the film or not, don't tell me. It's up to you. Really, because also the film is made. What can I do about it, you know? And a friend of mine who I really cherish and is a brother to me, made a film, and he invited me to come and watch it. And I went to watch the film. It was made already and thing. And take for granted, I was. It was summer in Cape Town in December, beautiful time. And I was like, why is this guy inviting me to a film that he has completed? I'd rather be in the streets enjoying life, you know? Nevertheless, I went to the screening. I saw the film. I said to him, how much of it are you still going to change? He said, that's it. I watched the film. Then I stood up. I said, thank you for inviting me. And I left. And his wife was upset. They were upset that I left. And eventually, after one month, they had the courage to confront me. And they said, it was very rude of you to leave without saying anything. I said, but the film is done. What can I do? If you are editing the film and you say to me, Carlo, what do you think? Then I can contribute. But once it's done, you know? And when I was about 22, I think, I made a documentary about filmmakers. And one of the filmmakers in it, Mickey Dube, said something really strange. At that time, I thought, my God, why would this guy say to me? He said to me, Carlo, filmmaking, as lovely as it is not life. And when I turned the age that I turned this year, I realized that filmmaking is not life. It's part of life, but it's not life. It's not everything that, you know, it's not everything that obsesses me. At least for me, it doesn't obsess me anymore. So I'm free. And therefore I make the films and I put them out and I'm in love with these ideas. I mean, I love this form. I love, except for one form, I love all the films I've made because I understand where they come from, you know, and they come from a place of my own truth, of my own honesty, of my own idealism, you know, and they can be flawed as they are, but they come from a place of really something really deep, and they represent something that's so deep. And I fought for every film I've made. I co-produce. I've never made a film up to, in the last 10 years, I've never made a film that I didn't raise at least part of the money for it. Never. I don't do it anymore, where I don't raise part of the money for it, and I've got, like, a say in the film and where it should go.
I've got a question. How much of the poor people in South Africa do you get to see these films? Because it's like changing their minds from what they think that the ANC is the biggest of everything in South Africa to show them the truth. What's happening in South Africa?
What's what?
What's happening in South Africa? They're not getting anywhere far, but they are standing still, but they still think ANC is everything.
I just heard someone say hi, Bo. I think there are people in this room who are much smarter than me to answer that question. Honestly speaking, on a human level, not even on a, which is a political level too, I ask myself this question. I say to myself, how can people who have been in prison, ready to sacrifice their lives, become who they become today? And I think that's fascinating. You know, how do you move from I'll give my life to struggle and poor people and justice and all those kind of things, and one day, you know, you are corruptible, corrupt, you don't care, you're indifferent, you know, you are repressive, you shoot people, you know, and when you see Rihat's film about Marikana, you ask yourself, how's that possible? And I think that's the question. I'm not sure whether I've got an answer, but that's, I think about that all the time.
Okay, you said a few minutes ago. I'm here. Sorry. Okay, you said a few minutes ago that you made this film and you threw it and you put it out there, and so on. And I think my understanding is that you just throw it out there. My question behind this is, of course, being South African and having seen the film, I'm sort of like listening to you now, and I'm there are a lot of emotions going through me, and I'm forced to ask you this question. what responsibility, after you've thrown out such a film, what's the responsibility on your part do you take by throwing such a film out into the public?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing, really. I don't think about those fundamental questions. You know, I'm not, when people meet me, you know, I did a series called When We Were Black, and it was set in the 70s on the eve of the thing, and these two young women came to me, they said to me, oh, we've been crying and crying and crying because of the series. And I was sitting in a restaurant with my laptop, and they started talking to me. And they said to me, it was the most disappointing experience they ever had. Because I think I'm not, because I'm not like, you know, I don't spend my life thinking. Really, it's really weird. But I don't spend my life thinking about all these questions of responsibility, what does it mean to be a filmmaker and everything else. I just make films. I love filmmaking. Really, I love filmmaking. And I love filmmaking because my grandmother was such a great storyteller and she told amazing stories, you know? And I love filmmaking from that point, you know? But I don't think about those questions. I've never been want to think, oh, what's my responsibility, what's my role in society, and all those kind of things. And I think that's why people often feel disappointed, you know, because they would like me to say, oh, you know, I'm going to change the world with my films, I'm going to do this, I'm going to actually put it in schools, and children will watch it, and everything else, whatever. And half of the time, I don't even do that, you know. I make the films, and my whole idea about it is that I make films that I want to see. That's the most important thing. Films that I don't think I can see.
Any more questions?
Okay. Carlo, it's me.
I'm scared, Jihan.
You should be.
Okay.
Okay, I see exactly what you're saying about being a personal thing and fulfilling, you know, this need to storytell. But your film involves hundreds of thousands of euros. So do you honestly think that what we do as filmmakers, it's a profession. We do have a responsibility. So you can't just say, oh, that's what I feel like and that's what I do and I get public money to finance it. So you do have a point. You are a filmmaker and I won't let you get away with it because it's...
Jihan, thank you very much. I think it's a valid point. But you know what I think? I think also that we lots of different people make films for different reasons. I don't live my life as a profound experience. I don't do that, generally. You know, I actually, for people who know me, I'm really superficial, absolutely. Completely superficial, okay? And I've never been one to regard myself as profound, as deep, as all those kind of things, which all these questions, you know? And therefore, you know, when I make a film, I have to fall in love with the idea of the film. I have to be able to defend the film, of course. But I have to tell you something. As a black South African who grew up, and you know, part of me grew up under apartheid, part of me in Cape Town, live in Cape Town, experience racism every day, and part of me who grew up in a village where there's so much poverty, there's all those kind of things, automatically, all these things have shaped who I am. You see what I mean? I don't have to think about them. They've shaped who I am because on my everyday life and the struggle, I live in an apartment in Cape Town where there's only 9 apartments and everyone's supposed to know everyone and everything else. And I can tell you, the other day I was walking out, I'd come from running, believe it, I do run. I'd come out from running and I was coming upstairs and I was sweating and breathing. And this woman who's my neighbor went like, ah, and I was like, what's wrong? She says, you scared me, you know? So the experience, and I used to say this in the 90s when we had, during the Truth Commission, and my friends who are, consider themselves to be more sophisticated, more layered, more political, and more educated than me, used to say, why would ordinary people forgive? You know, why are these women sitting there and forgiving? Okay, I'm not saying they should forgive, they shouldn't forgive. But what they miss, the point, is that there's a lived experience in most of us as black people. An experience, there are scars that are both external and internal that have shaped who we are. And they continue to do that. And they shape the work that we do because they are scars. Because every day when I go to the US or I come to Europe and I see and they call me on the side and they do everything else, that's my life, that's my experience. You know, I don't even have to read Karl Marx to know that. You know? So on another level, I live this experience as a black person, as a black male. And, you know, I was telling people yesterday, I was arrested for an envelope in Cape Town. For 7 hours, they put me in a holding cell for what they call that. They said I stole an envelope. So how can my films not project that? They do that automatically. You know, but I don't sit down and think, oh, how can I be profound? How can I be deep? What are my responsibilities? I just share my experience, my thoughts, my ideas, my scars, my wounds that are so deep that people cannot see. When I smile with white South Africans all the time, sometimes I want to say to them, can you see the scars and the wounds in me? Because they cannot see them sometimes. They choose not to see them, you know? So I don't know. I'm not sure whether I've answered your question. But yeah, it is what it is.
Are there any more questions? Oh, there's one. One last one. The last one.
We love you for it. Yeah. And those who don't want to see it, or those who think you're too critical, that's their own opinion. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to everyone who came. Thank you.